The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Hard to believe it's the last program of the work week. Coming up on today's show, we'll be talking about the blessing of God's government, some wonderful examples in Scripture that really make us better appreciate the love and the mercy and the guidance and the direction that God's government provides. Of course, we're coming into, or we're right in the midst of, the fall festival season, having just celebrated the Feast of Trumpets, and Atonement is coming up, the Feast of Tabernacles, and our mind is very much on a coming government. I'm trying to remember where, I think it was one of my father's articles or coworker letters, maybe it was in the PGR recently, but he talked about leadership in the recent coworker letter, and so our minds are certainly on the theme of godly government and just how different it will be. Of course, you look at the world today. We talk a lot about the world conditions, world news, and we see bad and corrupt and oppressive government everywhere. It's all over the place. And what's going to save us from this corrupt form of government, human government? It will be God's government. You look at the United States of America, it's been called the last best hope. But yet look at how government in the United States is divided, paralyzed in many ways. That will soon change. So we'll talk about the blessings of God's government coming up in the second segment. On yesterday's show, I mentioned this 87-page Senate report on Hunter Biden and all of his sleazy activities in Ukraine, in Russia, Kazakhstan, China, pulling in millions and millions of dollars. And did you know that this report, that this story was not covered on the network evening news or on the morning news shows over at ABC, CBS, NBC? It was not even mentioned. It's not even newsworthy. Imagine that. The son of a vice president of the United States. Speaking of government, human government. Bad government, corrupt government. The son of a vice president using his father's power and influence to garner tens of millions of dollars. And to have all of these connections with these shady companies in Ukraine, even one involved in sex trafficking Eastern European women. And that somehow is not worthy of the news. The news, the mainstream news, the media, they're not interested in that story. They don't want to talk about it at all. This really does highlight one of the massive problems with what we call media bias. It's not just what's covered, it's what's deleted. It's what's erased. You talk about cancel culture. I mean, this has been going on long before statues ever came down. Stories that are canceled. Stories that are buried. And then other ones that are created out of nothing. There's no facts, no evidence there. For years, we heard about Russia collusion. We heard about corruption between the Trump administration and all of these foreign agents. No facts, no evidence for any of that. I think I saw a tweet the other day about Carter Page, how that he received exactly $0 from Russian oligarchs. Hunter Biden, $3.5 million from the former mayor of Moscow, his wife. Years and years. What were they interested in? What was the media concerned about? What were they there telling you every day, day in and day? Some of them are still on it. And then along comes this report. There should be investigations into this. This was while Joe Biden was vice president. He was like the point man over Ukraine anyway. You had all of these Ukrainian officials, U.S. officials in Kiev, that were contacting the Obama State Department saying, look, we're here in Ukraine and we're trying to clean up some of the corruption that we see helping the Ukrainian government. And it doesn't really help our cause when you've got the vice president's son and all of these shady connections. Even the Obama people were reporting back to the State Department, to the Obama administration, saying this doesn't look so good. And Obama did nothing about it. Vice President Biden did nothing about it. And the news media, following in that same course, they do nothing about it today. It's not even covered. It's not even discussed. It's just been canceled, like so many other subjects. President Trump was at a rally yesterday in Florida, and he talked about how that so many of these so-called peaceful protests, the violence and all of that, it's just not covered. It's not discussed. Or if it is, it's reported in a laughable way, you know, with the fire going up in the background and the reporter telling you it's peaceful. Listen to President Trump from his rally in Florida last night, clip two.
They don't show the protesters. They don't show it. You know, when you think that, like, cities are burning down and storefronts are being exploded, people are being killed, they would have you believe there's nothing happening. It's the most incredible thing. I don't even understand why. No matter where your philosophy is, no matter where you stand, why wouldn't you want to show the facts, show what's happening, and then we fix it?
Why wouldn't you want to show what's happening? These are problems. And the media, presumably, they're there to help government, I guess, right? To report the truth. And then, as he says there, then we can get in there and fix it. Instead, there's this concerted effort to cover it up, to pretend that it's not happening. Or, as has been the case here recently, to blame what violence there is on white supremacy. That's been more commonly reported here of late. Antifa not mentioned. Black Lives Matter barely mentioned. Or if they are, it's always, always in a positive light. Why wouldn't you show what's really happening if you're a concerned citizen? Well, what these people in the media are obsessed with, what they're obsessed with right now, and there were all kinds of clips. I didn't even pull them because there were so many. The president saying that he's not going to leave office. And there was one clip, I believe, on MSNBC where they're, again, bringing up this, maybe the military is going to have to remove him. And, of course, the president's just out there saying, look, we want an honest election. Ballots are turning up in the ditch in Pennsylvania. In Wisconsin? That's right. The eight ballots in Pennsylvania, I believe, all had President Trump. They had voted for President Trump. Somehow they went missing. So he's there saying, we want an honest election. And he points out, as we've noted on this program, that it's the Democrats that have come out and said, look, we're not going to accept the results of the election on November 3rd. He pointed this out to the press pool yesterday as he was leaving the White House. Notice clip three.
We want to make sure the election is honest, and I'm not sure that it can be. I don't know that it can be with this whole situation, unsolicited ballots. They're unsolicited, millions being sent to everybody, and we'll see. But if you remember, Hillary Clinton just a week ago or so told Joe Biden, do not accept the results of the election under any circumstances. But you don't ask her that question. You only ask me the question.
You don't ask her that question. It's just me. It's just President Trump. He's the only problem. So much corruption. Who's going to save us from this kind of deceit, this kind of oppression, this kind of corruption? Sins of commission, as Mr. Armstrong used to say, and sins of omission as well. Details that are left out. See all this disturbing footage now of, you know, we reported on it before with respect to Victoria in Australia. And now you have people being arrested, in one case, tasered for not wearing a mask at an outdoor football facility, a big stadium. Hardly anyone's there. And along come the police to arrest a woman for not wearing a mask. Three others, I believe, in Idaho, churchgoers. They were outside. They didn't go inside. They were singing at a worship service. And two or three of them also arrested. I mean, and these are things that you, just a year ago, you would have associated only with China and Russia. Not, certainly not Idaho and Ohio. But now this is becoming routine. Here again, this was not last night. This was at his rally a couple nights ago, I believe, in Ohio. President Trump said this, clip four.
You can have a riot where you kill people in the streets, 25,000 people, don't have to wear masks, nothing. They can march down the streets, step on each other's face. They can do whatever the hell they want. That's okay, but you can't go to church.
That's the United States today. That's Australia. That's Britain. Now there's a huge crackdown in Britain. I'll come to that in a moment. Well, maybe I could skip ahead since I'm already there. But this is the second wave. You have government officials in the UK now talking about 500,000 potentially dying in the United Kingdom. We haven't yet even crossed the million threshold worldwide. And here come Neil Ferguson is actually making appearances again. The man who was so thoroughly discredited back in March and April, and he was violating his own lockdown suggestions. He's back. He's back in the news cycle. He's back saying, yeah, it could be a half million. So we're going through all of this yet again. It's like Groundhog Day. Here we are again. The second round, the second wave. This is from Fraser Nelson at the Telegraph. It says, given that the virus has not yet taken a million lives worldwide, 500,000 dead on our island may seem a bit of a stretch. But this figure is now back, being used in government calculations and defended to Boris Johnson as entirely plausible. And poor Boris Johnson, he's not standing up to the experts. They're just, at least you have President Trump on this side of the pond. There's some pushback. And yet even still, there's only so much that a president can do in the U.S. when you have these left-wing leaders as governors, as mayors. Fraser Nelson says it helps explain this sudden change in language. The canceled budget, and his claim that this virus is the greatest threat Britain has seen in his lifetime. I think in Britain, it's what, 42, 43,000 people have died in a nation of 70 million? And now they're saying it's going to be 10 times worse in this second wave. It says it's not about what he has seen so far, but about what he fears could still lie ahead. This is basically Fraser Nelson saying, this is what This is what Boris Johnson is basing it on. Not what's happened thus far, but what might happen. And Neil Ferguson, he's made a reappearance. He's come back from the dead to tell us that it could be a 500,000. This could be far worse than the first go-round. Now, in a lot of ways, the UK is following in the steps of Belgium. They had a second wave as well. And yet Belgium has recently said, well, you know what? We're not going to tighten up on the lockdown because we're finding that most of these cases, the cases are rising. Okay, they are rising. But the death rate, it continues to go down. Isn't that what it used to be about? Going back to March and April? How many people are actually dying? So many of these more recent cases, they're not as serious. It's the same in the United States. The same trend. So Belgium said, you know what? Forget it. We don't want to make it to where the cure is worse than the disease. But the UK is heading down that road yet again. And very few people will push back against the experts. Rand Paul, by the way, they had a hearing, I believe, on Wednesday. I didn't get time to play these clips for you yesterday. But here is Senator Paul questioning Dr. Fauci, clip 6.
Which brings us to an important question. Is man really capable of altering the course of an infectious disease through crowd control? The statistics argue a resounding no. The evidence argues that mitigation efforts have failed to flatten the curve, that most countries, regardless of public health policy, suffered a significant spike in deaths and then a gradual decline. As for now, what we do know is that New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Rhode Island still allow the highest death rates in the world. We also know that Sweden, who enforced few mandates, ended up with a death rate one-third of New York and New Jersey. We also know that the overall death rate for the U.S. now is essentially equivalent to that of South America, where social distancing and mitigation efforts are virtually impossible.
That's Senator Rand Paul yesterday pointing out, you know, what are we to make of this? You know, where's the science in this? What about comparing? Fauci did not like him comparing the United States to Sweden. Sweden, of course, had no lockdown. He said that, well, you can't really compare the two. Victor Davis Hanson had a piece just the other day. He said the public trust in science depends on its consistency, its transparency, and its divorce from politics and ideology. So that's part of the problem here, is that Dr. Fauci himself, he's an ideologue. He's a left-wing advocate. And he's had the primary, or at least most of the influence, going back a few months ago to the way the United States responded to the pandemic. Hanson says there can be no left or right, liberal or conservative, blue state or red state slant if scientific expertise is to be taken seriously. Unfortunately, during the COVID-19 pandemic, the very opposite has sometimes occurred. And that's why you get all these scientific projections or models. They're all over the place. Scaremongering. And here nations in Europe are going through it the second time around. The UK, I guess, leading the way. Here's one more clip from Rand Paul from Wednesday, clip 7.
Dr. Fauci, today you said you are not for economic lockdown, yet your mitigation recommendations from dating to baseball to restaurants to movie theaters have led to this economic lockdown. Do you have any second thoughts about your mitigation recommendations, considering the evidence that despite all of the things we've done in the U.S., our death rate is essentially worse than Sweden, equivalent to the less developed world that is unable to do any of the things that you've been promoting? Do you have any second thoughts? Are you willing to look at the data that countries that did very little actually have a lower death rate than the United States?
That's great. Any second thoughts? I mean, let's look at the data. It's science, right? It's not red state, blue state. It's science. Let's look at the death rate. How many people have died? Well, as I say, Dr. Fauci He didn't like it. I don't have time to play some of his responses, but suffice it to say, it's refreshing to just hear someone challenge the expert who got it way wrong. Same with Neil Ferguson. And yet, like I say, they come back from the dead. How quickly people forget. How quickly we forget. Remember, 500,000? 600,000 in the UK. Millions in the United States. I think it was 2.2 million, right? Millions. We still haven't crossed the million threshold worldwide. In a world of over 7 billion people. That's not to say that the sickness isn't real. But what is the death rate, even worldwide? 1 million out of a population of 7.2, 7.3, 7.4 billion? Well, you can do the math yourself. There were more incriminating FBI text messages disclosed yesterday. I guess it was revealed in a court filing for the Flynn case. That still goes on because the judge won't let it go. The DOJ said, that's enough. We're dropping the charges. This was bogus from the beginning. This was a sham investigation. So the DOJ drops it. And yet another activist judge. He's got to keep it going. He's got to go after Flynn. Because Flynn was connected to Donald Trump. And so he should go to prison. So here come these text messages. Sidney Powell's out there trying to defend the general. And she's revealing all of these texts. I guess it was after 3 years they've requested these messages. Finally, Chris Wray turns it over. And how condemning of the FBI. One thing you see in these messages is that those investigations, Crossfire Razor, Crossfire Hurricane, counterintelligence investigation, it was orchestrated from the top. Comey, McCabe, those individuals, Yates, Brennan, Clapper, and yes, even Barack Obama. And what's amazing about these messages, they go back to 2016, 2017. It's all of these mid-level FBI agents that couldn't believe what was being done. Is this really happening? Are we really going there? There's no evidence. And what astounds me is that there was not one whistleblower. Where was the equivalent of Colonel Vindman? Remember, he came forward. He had heard the phone call to the Ukraine president. So he came forward to blow the whistle. He didn't realize that the Trump administration would then reveal the transcript, which would prove that there was nothing there. There was no there. But the point of it is, where was the whistleblower who knew what Comey and McCabe and them were up to? And yet they voiced concerns in these text messages, but none of them really did anything about it. What was going on all along? Well, my father wrote in 2018, the previous president filled America's law enforcement agencies with treasonous agents, plural. He led what is known as the deep state. You can go back 3, 4, 5 years. You can go back to America Under Attack in 2013 and see where so many of these things then might have sounded like conspiracy theories. But now look at the messages. Look at what we've learned. When BuzzFeed published that Steele dossier back in January of 2017, there was all of these FBI agents, their names, by the way, are redacted, so we don't know exactly who they are. But one FBI agent texted, "We all went and purchased professional liability insurance. We've got to get liability insurance here because there's a new administration coming in. There's a new head of the DOJ coming in. There's probably a new FBI director coming in soon. And we need to protect ourselves." This is what FBI agents were saying to each other.
right at the end of the Obama administration, they knew they were engaged in criminality. They knew it. They knew they were crooked cops. They knew this was illegal. Liability insurance. That's the kind of thing that sports stars and celebrities get. But mid-level FBI agents to protect themselves? Oh, yes.
It's amazing how many of them knew, and yet not one said or did anything. Here's a text from August 11th, after Crossfire Hurricane was open. So this is 2016. It says, doing all this election research, I think some of these guys want a Clinton presidency. Really? You suppose? They certainly did. On January 4th, Donald Trump tweeted about an intelligence briefing that he was supposed to receive. He said this, the intelligence briefing on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday, perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. That's what President Trump tweeted. He knew. He knew what was going on. And all of his enemies in the media, you know how they reacted to tweets such as that. Oh, he's into conspiracy theories. Oh, now he's saying that they're spying on our campaign. Oh, now he's saying just crazy stuff. Well, who was right? Who was right in the end? Agents wondered how the January 5th briefing, that was the one Obama was involved in. Crossfire Razor, I believe that was the investigation into Flynn. Just a couple of examples from text messages. The Crossfire Roadshow, they called it. Rabbit holes and conspiracy theories, said another text. So glad they're closing Razor. This is a nightmare, said one. People here are scrambling for info to support certain things, and it's a madhouse. This is the FBI. This is according to FBI agents. The whole thing is pretty ugly, said one. Listen to Sean Davis. He was on Fox News last night. And of course, it's the Federalist. It's publications like the Federalist breaking the story here. Not CNN, not NBC, not the New York Times. Here's Sean Davis, the co-founder of The Federalist, talking about these latest revelations. Clip one.
The corruption at the FBI and how they conducted their anti-Trump jihad was so bad that FBI agents were purchasing for themselves, using your money and my money, by the way, as taxpayers, purchasing liability insurance for when people finally found out how corrupt their activities were. In these texts, we also learned from these agents, who remain unnamed, unfortunately, that they found nothing on Flynn. They even used national security letters to avoid subpoenas in order to get to his financial records, and they said there's nothing there. And, you know, we're told it was only the leadership who was doing kind of bad things. The rank and file are good. These were rank and file agents talking about this, and where were the whistleblowers, and why are we learning about this 3 years after Chris Wray took over the FBI? Why are we having to learn about this from a court case? Why was this not disclosed to Congress? And it's a complete disgrace that it's taken this long to get any real information about it.
For 3 years, we've had to wait 3 years. And it's thanks to Sidney Powell, who's trying to get General Flynn's case dropped. It's thanks to this court filing that we learn about this 3 years on. FBI agents seeking liability insurance to protect themselves, to cover their tracks. Going back to my father's article from 2018, it says the entire Trump-Russia investigation is based on a hoax. Robert Mueller's team has been searching for evidence of collusion for nearly a year and found nothing. But what has been revealed is a tremendous amount of lawbreaking by bureaucrats in intelligence and law enforcement. It says the previous president filled America's law enforcement agencies with treasonous agents. It says he led what is known as the deep state. I gave you that bit earlier. Something diabolical was going on until Mr. Trump was elected, and it's still going on behind the scenes during his presidency.
And the media aided and abetted the whole process. They're part of it. That's why when the Hunter Biden report comes out, they ignore it. That's not part of the narrative, that they are there to tell you every day. It says the more stories that come out, the clearer this ugly reality becomes. This is corruption on a deep level. So deep, that most people won't even believe it. Look at the other revelation yesterday. We learned about Christopher Steele's primary source, how that, I think he was being investigated. I'm a little bit off on my page numbering here, but if I can find the sheet, here we go. Chris Steele's main source for the dossier, he was investigated for being a national security threat between 2009 and 2011. So the FBI knew that this source, this was the primary source for the infamous Steele dossier. And the FBI knew that guy was a bad actor. They knew he was a national security threat. He was under investigation himself back in 2009 and 2011. Guess who the FBI director was back then? That would be Bob Mueller, Robert Mueller III. They knew it was a scam from the beginning. They knew it was a hoax from the beginning. This was a revelation that was made known in the Horowitz report from December of 2019, but it was only recently, I guess it was redacted in the report. Now we know. So this whole scam, Mueller was supposed to be looking for Russian disinformation, right? And yet here he overlooks Steele's primary source, a guy that had been investigated for 2 years between 2009 to 2011, being investigated basically for being a Russian spy. I mean, the irony here. And then the accusations for years that went on, that it was all these people, Carter Page and whoever else in the Trump campaign, that were Russian spies. How much money did Carter Page get from a Russian oligarch? They knew, these FBI techs also, they also reveal that these were agents that knew the Steele dossier was garbage. They knew it was garbage from the beginning. And yet BuzzFeed runs with it. CNN follows. They had the hook. Comey, remember, set up the president so that it could give the Steele dossier the credibility that it needed for everyone to report on it. It was all a setup. They set up General Flynn as well. And he's still trying to extract himself from this nightmare. This nightmare of a hoax. It's not just the sins of commission, but also omission. It's all of it. Think of the stories when you consider bad government, corrupt government, evil government, and then the media aiding and abetting, as my father said in that article from 2018. The stories that get covered, the stories that are made up, and then actual evidence and facts of wrongdoing that just simply gets covered up. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can send any message to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
One of our listeners just sent me a sampling of some of the headlines from your New York Times, the paper of record. Says here, this is all, I guess, from the front page. Trump again refuses to commit to accepting election results. Another one, at Pentagon, fears grow that Trump will pull military into election unrest. Another one asks, will Trump's presidency ever end? Will it ever end? This is the New York Times. Another one here, Trump wants you to think you can't get rid of him. And then one, Trump's Stalinist approach to science. Another one says, how to debate someone who lies. Here's the only one that our listener could find regarding Joe Biden. It says here, Joe Biden's stutter is his superpower. Wow. That's all that we have about the Biden family. Certainly nothing about his son. Nothing about that Senate report from the other day. That's not covered, remember. That's canceled. That's canceled before it even gets off and running. Well, you can see the need, can't you? You can see the need for righteous rule, for righteous government. And it makes you appreciate. It makes you appreciate what we have in God's church, what we have in God's family. I went with the students the other day. I went through Numbers chapter 9. This is the section where the Israelites were basically in the wilderness and they were following the cloud wherever it went. As you know from the history, they had to set up these massive encampments, and sometimes they would have to tear it all down soon after they set it up. If God said to move, they had to move. If the cloud was stationary, then they had to stay where they were. And God was teaching them, in all of this, God was teaching them how to look to him, how to follow him. God was the one who determined their movements. This is Numbers 9 and verse 17. It says, and when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after the children of Israel journeyed, and in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Eternal, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. So they had to be in a constant state of readiness, the Israelites. And at God's command, they had to be ready to move. So there's obviously a lot of lessons in this for us. We can't be attached to the things of this world. We're living in a spiritual wilderness. And when God says move, we better go forward. We have to follow. We have to be attentive to God's commands, to God's instructions. We have to learn to constantly look to follow, and to support God's government, his leadership. And this is, again, this is, when you consider the world today and what God reveals in the Holy Bible, godly government, righteous government, that's the basic theme of the Bible. This was what was rejected from the very beginning. Lucifer, when he rebelled against God, Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28, when he took his throne, a throne that was on this earth, and he wanted to raise it, he wanted to lift it above God's throne. And of course, he couldn't do that. God put him down, although God did allow him to remain on the throne of this earth for 6,000 years of human civilization. And here we are at the tail end of it, and man has, he has created all kinds of governments. There's something for everyone in this world today, and they're all failing. Even the last best hope, nothing but failure. In God's family, it's very different. Ephesians 4 says, and he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. You can put this passage together with 1 Corinthians 12 and see how God organizes the church. There is structure there. There is government there, but government is a gift. It's a gift. The Revised Standard Version says, and his gifts were that some should be apostles, prophets, evangelists, and so on. God provides gifts of leadership because we need direction. We need the pillar cloud, so to speak. We need guidance. We need to know when to move. Think of it in the terms of a family. A little infant that's just brought into existence. I saw one on the plane coming over here last week. This little boy must have been, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks old. Just a tiny, tiny little thing. The mom was walking around the cabin and basically was holding this little boy in both of her hands. And it wasn't much bigger than her two hands put together. And what does that little infant know and understand about travel and learning and growing and paying bills and being responsible, learning how to work hard, as I discussed yesterday? Well, he has to learn those things. He needs to grow some physically. And of course, during that period, you have parents who are providing, who are protecting. And then hopefully, if they're fulfilling their responsibilities beyond that, they're teaching and training as well. And disciplining when necessary. We need that. All of us need that. We've all been in that position. Problem is, when we get older, we get hard-headed and stubborn, and human nature doesn't want to be told what to do. Human nature resists against government, leadership. Look at the dishonor and the disrespect we see on the streets of America today, all over the world. And it's on both sides. It's on all sides because of human nature. Romans 8, 7, Jeremiah 17, 9. Ephesians 4, verse 12 says, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. So that's why it's there. That's a good thing, right? That's a gift. Paul describes it as a gift because it helps perfect the saints. All too often, we look at God's government as something that, well, particularly if it's involving any kind of correction, we view it as something that's negative. That's the way Satan wants for us to view God's government. But in fact, God's government is the greatest gift that he can give to mankind. And mankind has rejected that. The Israelites of old, the Israelites in the wilderness, they rejected it. They wouldn't submit to God's authority. They were constantly complaining. They were arguing with Moses. They disapproved of what leadership was there for them in the form of Moses and Aaron and others. And of course, they were ungrateful as well. Notice an example, again, back in the book of Numbers. This is Numbers 12. In verse 1, it says, and Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman he had married. And they said, Has God indeed spoken only by Moses? Has he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. God was listening to their grumbling, to their complaining. And Moses was obviously not a perfect man. He made his mistakes. And here comes Miriam and Aaron. Quick to point that out. That's another ugly characteristic of human nature. How quickly it can spot the mistakes and sins of others. But then what do? We cover up our own. We cancel those out. We pretend they're not there. What was God's assessment? Verse 3, it says, "Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth." So this was a meek and humble and submissive leader. Moses was, he was the leader. He was their intercessor. He was their mediator, the Israelites. They looked to him and Moses looked to God. But look at how submissive Moses was to government. The meekest man on earth. Verse 4 says, "And the Eternal spoke suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam." It says, "Come out, you three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation." And they came out, the three came out, and the Eternal came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. They both came forth. In verse 6, I'll read this from Moffat. It says, "Hear what I say," he told them, "to and prophet among you, I make myself known by visions. I talk to him in dreams. Not so with my servant Moses, so faithful in all my household. I speak to him." This is God talking. "I speak to Moses directly, openly, with no dark sayings, and he sees the very form of the Eternal. Why then were you not afraid to attack my servant Moses?" God told Miriam and Aaron, "Look, I have a special relationship with Moses. I speak with him face to face. I would think you'd be a little more careful about what you say to this man of God, about how you treat this man in a position of leadership. Where's the respect? Where's the support? Where's the thanks? Where's the praise?" That was lacking. Verse 9, it says, "And the anger of the Eternal was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous." So God corrected them pretty harshly, immediately. And you can continue to read in the passage where Moses intervened on Miriam's behalf. And he was a meek individual. He was humble himself. He had mercy on these two. But what were they thinking coming forward with these accusations, with these criticisms and complaints? Now, that doesn't mean you can't ever confront someone, even in a position of leadership, as long as you do it in a right attitude. It may be necessary at times. But their attitude was not right. They just came forward speaking evil of one of God's servants. And God didn't like it. There's another example of this in number 16. This is with Korah and his rebellion. And he came forward and he had 250, I think it was. Impressive men, Israelites, the leading men of Israel, and they came forward, they gathered themselves together, as it says in Numbers 16:3, and here again they hurled all these accusations at Moses, saying, you're taking too much on yourself, Moses. We've got some really qualified and capable leaders over here that can do quite a bit as well. And God was watching. Yet again, God was observing this. In the last part of verse 7, Numbers 16 and verse 7, Moses says, "You take too much upon you, you sons of Levi." They were guilty of exactly what they accused Moses of. They were in prominent positions. They did have lead positions. But like Lucifer, they wanted it to be higher than Moses. They wanted as much authority, more so. They wanted more authority and responsibility than even Moses had. Verse 8, and Moses said unto Korah, "Hear, I pray you, you sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the eternal, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them?" You're already serving as ministers to this congregation, servants at the tabernacle of all places. You're not happy with that? You want more? This did not impress God. Verse 10, and he brought you near to him, and all your brethren, the sons of Levi with you, and you seek the priesthood also? For which cause both you and all your company are gathered together against the eternal? And what is Aaron that you murmur against him? See, Moses said, you better be careful with this murmuring. If God detects a government problem, he acts. He acts. He did in Numbers 12, as we saw, and he did it here in Numbers 16. He put all of these rebels, and that's what they were. He put them all to death. And if you read through the end of Numbers 16, well, soon after these impressive men of Korah were put to death, the people of Israel started to complain. They started to gripe and to complain and to grumble about the action that God had taken. And so God was, well, he was in the process, actually, of unleashing a plague on all of the people of Israel, and people were dying by the thousands. But Moses sent Aaron into the midst of the congregation to make an appeal to God to have mercy on these people. This was the government over the people of Israel. This is the way Moses ruled. He wasn't a tyrant. Now, he was a man of God. He spoke for God. He talked with God face to face. The buck stopped with him for sure. But he didn't abuse God's government. He was a righteous leader. And the people of Israel should have realized what a wonderful gift he was to their congregation. What a wonderful blessing he was. That's what God's government is. If you continue studying in Numbers 17, you read about Aaron's rod. These rods that symbolized authority. Verse 2, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel, and take of every one of them a rod according to the house of their fathers, and of all their princes, according to the house of their fathers, 12 rods. Write you every man's name upon his rod, and you shall write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi. For one rod shall be for the head of the house of their fathers." So these rods, each tribe, symbolizing government or authority. Notice verse 8, it says, "And it came to pass that on the morrow Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded and brought forth buds and bloomed, blossoms, and yielded almonds." What a miracle! This rod produced fruit, growth. And that's what God's government does, just like we read in Ephesians 4. It's a gift. It's a gift to the church. It's what brings us to perfection for the perfecting of the saints. If we submit to God's authority, God's loving family government in our lives, then we will produce, just like the rod of Aaron in Numbers 17, will produce fruit. There will be growth. And as I say, Ephesians 4 makes this same point as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.